Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Thursday, January 16th, 2020. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, good to be here.
Glad to have you with us. Also with me today, I have Dave Hamilton. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Kelly. Thanks for having me. Fun stuff.
I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to have you here with us. I am also glad to be here. I should probably have a little more coffee before I start the show next time. Andrew, I actually want to start with you and talk a little bit about a tip you wrote up about the magic of long press in Safari.
Yeah, there are a lot of long press shortcuts in Safari. And by long press, I just mean holding your finger down on something for a second. Mm-hmm. But because of that, none of them are obvious. So you kind of have to trial and error figure out what's going on.
Accidentally.
About mobile Safari, right? Just to yes. be clear on yes. iOS. Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
mobile Safari. Yeah.
So one thing. Now this is what kind of sparked this tip because I recently figured this out on the iPad. So if you have. With iOS 13, you can have like two instances of Safari open. So you can have like one tab on one part of the window and then another tab in another part of the window.
Oh, like split screen view?
Yeah, split screen. Okay. And then when you want to bring them back together again on one of the windows in Safari, mm-hmm. there's like that square icon in the upper right, I think. So mm-hmm. you just long press that and then tap merge all windows and it will bring all the tabs together again, which is really cool.
Wait, say that again. Where do you tap to do that?
It's this icon that's a couple squares, it looks like.
It would be the windows. Right. Like it's the one you tap for all your tabs.
And when you long tap, you tap and hold and then there are other options besides that one, like closing windows or closing a tab.
Okay, so that's the one where I could close all tabs or whatever.
Yeah, close all tabs and all that,
to it. Is that right, Andrew?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, got it. Okay, cool.
Huh. Yeah.
Yeah. I have found more than one time in talking to somebody who says, you know, if you have a minute, could you help me? I have this weird question about my phone. A lot of the time when it's a general... it's acting weird. Like I tap on this and something else happens that's not supposed to be what happens when I tap on it. It's because it's long press almost every time. It's doing this thing I don't understand. Well, that's because, you're trying to tap, but you leave your finger there and long press makes other stuff happen. So, and we've talked about before how the discoverability on some of this stuff is terrible. So I'm guessing, Andrew, this happened to you on accident. And yes. and you went, what the heck is going on? Oh, hey, that's kind of cool. Because that's how a lot of...
But all these other ones I've like just done by, you know, poking around and see what happens.
Yeah, definitely. And I know sometimes this is where the tips come from when we write them up at Mac Observer is, did you see this? Did you know that this was a thing? Wait, what? Yeah. So... that's a fair number of the meetings that end up being tips that show up on Mac Observer is somebody going, did you know that if you that, but this way, then it does a whole different thing? What? No. So, yeah. Discoverability of that kind of feature in iOS is probably something for another day, but it is very interesting that that's the thing that you can do because first of all, even the split screen one, having two different Safari windows and split screen is something I didn't even know you could do. It never occurred to me to try to add Safari twice. And as a person who has gotten the error that says you have 500 tabs open and you need to close some, like what's your next move? It may be good news or bad news that I just found out that I can have two of them open at the same time. I can just hit that tab limit even faster. Anyway, so that's a really good tip. What else is in that menu if you long press it, though, Andrew?
So speaking of having a lot of tabs open, you can also opt to close all of them at once.
Yeah, I have a lot of anxiety about that option.
But so another tip, when we go into the toolbar, you'll see that A icon. There's two A's. So long pressing on that will enable reader mode. Which is kind of nice because that, you know, just gives you the pure text and images. Mm-hmm. Now, if you single tap on that, this isn't a long press, just a single tap, then you find the website settings where you'll find, like, have reader view open automatically or always requests a desktop view of the website. Nice.
Okay.
And there's also a setting there if you use content blockers.
Oh, excellent.
And so we're still on the toolbar. So another one, just long press on the URL and it will copy it. Or if you have like if you're trying to search for something and you have like say a word copied to the clipboard, you can open up a new tab, long press on the empty address bar, and then you can tap paste and search. So it just removes like 1 second of a tap.
Yeah. I've found if you take a URL from somewhere else and you paste it into Safari, you get an option for paste and go. Instead of pasting it in there and then having to hit done or something, you can sometimes save a little extra tapping around that way.
Mm-hmm.
So paste and go is very handy. I have found that one quite often.
your comment about closing all tabs, Andrew, reminded me of an option that will probably also give Kelly lots of stress, but it will help you manage your stress.
I understand that I'm not people. So Dave, share this tip for the people.
No, there are a lot of people that use their tabs as like bookmarks and they don't want them closed. And I totally get that, right? I mean, however you want to manage your phone is fine. However, the first time with iOS 13 that you offer that you close all tabs, it will ask you, do you want me to automatically close them for you? Never after 1 week or after 1 month. But after that dialogue is dismissed, regardless of what you answer there, you will never see that dialogue again. But you can get there in Settings, Safari, and then just, you know, scroll down a little to the Tabs section. And you can choose close tabs after manually 1 day, 1 week, or 1 month. And I find that helpful. But again, it's personal preference. That's why it's a preference.
Yeah.
So you can choose that if you want to kind of manage your tabs. It is a good idea not to leave hundreds and hundreds of tabs open in Safari.
It is.
Just from a management standpoint, memory really management, from a resource management standpoint.
Yes.
Because they're all synced potentially, if you're doing things by default, they're all synced via iCloud. So when you click on the little cloud icon on, say, your desktop, you will see this long list of tabs from, your iPhone Safari, and that may or may not get in your way. So, there are a variety of reasons why you may want to have your phone sort of auto-manage this.
Well, you may want to knock that off. I will tell you, if you are listening and you are tech support for your family, it may be a good idea if you have family members who don't understand that there are tabs in a web browser, because I have those family members, opening two different tabs at the same time, like, is sort of anxiety inducing. They're like, I'm going to open a window, I'm going to do what I need to do, and then close the window. So I've turned that on for automatic after a while, because if you just go to the same, if these are people who are going to the same web page all the time, I go to the bank website every day because they don't have an app, or I read the local newspaper every day. That person may have a stack of tabs open inadvertently because they didn't realize that's what was happening because they weren't closing them in mobile Safari when they're done. So I've turned this on for a couple of family members because they never go back to those tabs later. They're like sharks in Safari, like always forward, never backward. So that's part of where sometimes that can be a handy thing. Again, from a resource management standpoint, if somebody never goes back and opens that tab again for something, then it might be nice to just have those close automatically for them anyway, and then keep their phone a little perkier overall. Because if they're never using them, they're never going to notice. So it's not going to bother anything.
Right, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So long press. Long press is good in a lot of ways. And this brings up two things that I think a lot of people don't always realize, and that is you can long press on lots and lots and lots of stuff in iOS and get all kinds of interesting options for it. And the other is that the system apps, you know, we all sort of get trained in whatever apps we're using on our phone that are third party. We get trained that the settings are somewhere within that app. But all of the ones for Apple's apps, the stuff that comes on your phone, are all in the settings app. So there are ways you can adjust behavior in messages or in Safari or even in the phone app. And you can make some of those adjustments just by going to the settings app and tapping on some of those. And maybe there's something that's sort of irritating about one of the stock apps that, or the stock app, and you want to get rid of it. You can do that. And so that makes it sometimes, that's a thing that I think sometimes gets overlooked. Like, oh, it does this and I don't like it. And, you know, but you can change that. There's a good chance there's a way that you can adjust that behavior in the settings. They just don't all have their own settings screen within the application itself, the way the third party ones do.
Mm-hmm.
So I do find it, like when I get a new version of iOS, that's one of the first things I do is sort of sit down in the settings screen and go, what did they adjust in the settings for this so that maybe I can turn off the thing that's been bugging me since they introduced it last time or whatever, and kind of get an idea of what adjustments there are that you can make. So that one is definitely a good idea. Now, Dave and I started having a conversation during the meeting, and Dave, I want to talk to you a little bit about this, and it was travel, but travel when you live a USB-C lifestyle.
Yeah, well, I mean, so traveling is a thing that many, but of course not all of us do. USB-C on our laptops is something we will all eventually, and probably sooner rather than later, wind up dealing with. Mm-hmm. You know, but the laptops have become, I would say, for many of us, laptops have become 10-year devices as opposed to, you know, 10 years ago being 3-year devices, right? Mm. So, which is a great thing. However, as we upgrade, we will find ourselves with MacBooks of variety of labels, with no label, with Air, with Pro, mm-hmm. all using USB-C. So this world of USB-C is definitely either our present or our future.
Yeah.
And I've done a few trips now in the last I joined the USB-C world about, 14, 15 months ago. Mm-hmm. And immediately I loved it. You know, there's a lot of there is change resistance from all of us. I get that,
yeah.
But I found once I was forced to embrace the USB-C world or dongle world, as I like to call it, there's a lot of benefit here. Now, my first USB-C machine, there are now many that I use, including the, iMac in front of me. But my first USB-C machine was a 2018 Air, which is not just USB-C. It has USB-C ports, but it is also Thunderbolt 3. The lower-end MacBooks are just USB-C. They are not Thunderbolt 3. Most of what we're going to talk about here covers both, but there are a few things where Thunderbolt 3 matters. Mm-hmm. And Thunderbolt 3 is awesome because Thunderbolt is your expansion bay, right? It is like having PCI slots that we used to have in our old desktop machines, right? Mm-hmm. It allows you to tap directly into the motherboard, and that's wonderful. USB-C with dongles lets you do something very, very close to that. And that's the part that I love, because you can have people complain. The standard complaint is, oh, if I get a machine with USB-C, I don't have all of my ports. Well, the reality is, yeah, you get to pick your ports. And even if you and I buy the exact same MacBook, we get to pick the ports that work for each of us, and we're not stuck with what the other one wants, which yes. is what we had in the past. And that led to these machines with a zillion ports along the side, all kinds of things that would fail and be weird, and all, and you were buying stuff and lugging around stuff that you did not want. You know, if you never needed an HDMI port, that thing was useless for you on your MacBook. Or if you only needed it 3 times a year,
yeah.
that was useless to be lugging that around and all of that. So USB-C is good. So I will start with the with power for travel and perhaps even at home. My favorite. So the nice part about USB-C is you now are in a world of standard-based power. You're not stuck with Apple's trademarks keeping you from buying third-party power adapters, right? With MagSafe, yes. that sucked because the only people you can buy power adapters from that have MagSafe are a company named Apple, right? There are no third parties that do it. There were some third parties that got smart. You would like snip a cable and solder and all this other stuff, and then you can use my portable solutions. Like, yeah, well, that's awful. So now you get to use universal, you know, industry standard power via power delivery, which is a thing. And it's awesome. And so my favorite portable power adapter, but this would also work at your desk or at, you know, in your bedroom, is the Anker. They call it the PowerPort 3 Slim, but be careful. There seem to be two products called this. So use the one that we're going to put a link for the show notes in.
Yes.
This is a four-port device. It's really thin. It's using the new gallium nitride, which we've talked about on the show before. It's better than silicon because it allows you it's lower in heat, it's smaller, so you get more in a smaller package and lighter package, which is great.
Yeah.
It's a four-port device. It's got one USB-C power port on it and three USB-A power ports. So so you get to power all your devices from this one thing. I have one of these in my travel bag and I love it. So so that's step number one.
And it's a good transition too, because like this will do you very well until you eventually upgrade your lightning cables to USB-C or micro USB cables to USB-C on the other end. Because I still have loads and loads and loads of those. And even if I went out tomorrow and bought a new computer, that doesn't change what the rest of my ancillary plugging in cables are going to be. So at least in the short term, like this definitely helps.
I don't think this is a short term solution. I don't think USB-A cables are going to, even if you bought even if today was the first day you ever owned a portable computer that required you to have cables with it, you would still be buying cables with USB-A for power for all your other devices. So, we live in a world that is powered by both USB-A and USB-C, and I think it will remain that way for quite some time.
Okay.
But here's the good news is that in addition, because it's industry standard power, you now have the option to have a battery that powers your laptop or charges your laptop.
That's
on
true.
The go. That's not something you got to do before. And again, I turn to Anker. There are a couple of other companies that make good portable batteries. They are not all created equal. I have one from a company that I just won't mention, and so don't buy from a company I don't mention. But it rarely syncs up properly. Most of the time, it thinks it is trying to be charged by my laptop as opposed to wanting to charge my laptop. That's a frustrating scenario to be in.
Yes.
That has not happened to me with this Anker battery here. Now, there are a couple of batteries that I will recommend. They're different sizes, and when you have more potential juice in the battery, it can charge your laptop not only more, but also faster. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things that will charge power delivery at 18 watts. That's sort of enough to keep your laptop trickling along, but it's not going to add a lot of charge to it, especially if you're using it.
Yeah.
The battery that I've got here, you know, with 45 watts of power delivery, that's a lot and is more than a MacBook Air can even take. A MacBook Air maxes out, I think, at 30. So it will see it. It works fine with it. It just doesn't need any more. The MacBook Pros can go up to, 97 watts. It's not quite 100, just because of the math. But this will also charge those. It just doesn't charge them at 100. It charges them, or it doesn't charge them at 97. It charges them at 45, a little slower.
So let's stop for a second, and I want to jump in and point out, because this is a thing that I hear sometimes from people, somebody has an iPhone or is on their second or third iPhone maybe, and then they get an iPad, right? And they've got the bigger charger and they're still using them separately. I'm like, no, the iPad charger will charge everything. Oh, but it's for my iPad. I can't plug my phone into that. Yes, you can. And not only are you not going to hurt your phone, but you're not going to hurt anything. So like if you use that iPad charger to charge your Kindle, because you take the lightning cable out and you put in a micro USB cable, you'll charge your Kindle faster. You'll charge your headphones faster. Like,
potentially. A lot of devices won't pull. If the size of the battery that you are charging, not charging from, but the battery that you are charging ultimately defines the maximum at which it can take a charge.
But there is a maximum and there are safeguards in place to keep you from blowing something up because you plugged in a cable to a little more powerful wall wart than what it came with. So it's a lot safer. And if you leave it plugged in, it's not drawing a ton of juice, like, you know, with the kilowatt that you could go see, like your phone charger overnight was still drawing power. Like a lot of that stuff has been resolved. So I know there's a lot of people who had that sort of ingrained in them when they maybe first got an iPhone or first got something that you charged over USB. And I know it's a hard habit to break because it was hard for me to break, but knowing that you can take that iPad charger and charge your phone and it'll charge your phone a little faster than the little one that came with your iPhone, that's a good thing to know. And you only have to take one charger with you if you only have to charge one thing at a time, that kind of stuff. And, you know, something like this Anker charger that we're going to link to in the show notes, like that's part of what makes those great is that they have technology in them to go to the device and go, how much power can you take at a time? I'm going to give you that much. And so sometimes when you get some of these third party things, you can get something that charges a little more efficiently than whatever came in the box with it.
For sure.
Yeah. I know not everybody remembers that. So I want to make sure we point out like a lot of this stuff, like a lot of these problems are well solved problems and you don't have to worry about them anymore like you used to.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So getting on from now, you know how to charge your device and you can do it in a variety of ways and also remotely while on the move, I should say. You definitely are going to need a dock and probably a couple of them. Thankfully, they're relatively inexpensive. And when I say a dock, what I mean is a device that plugs into one of your USB-C or perhaps Thunderbolt ports. I mean, it's the same port, but it might speak a different protocol and gives you the ports that you want while you travel. There are two that I choose to travel with. One is Otherworld Computing's USB-C travel dock. This one has a couple of USB-A ports on it. It's got an HDMI port on it, and it's got a USB-C port that will allow your power to pass through. So you could leave this potentially plugged in, say, at the desk in your hotel. This is how I use this particular one. Mm-hmm. And just let it be there. So when I need to plug into, say, the TV and watch a movie, I've got HDMI. When I need to, you know, if I can use it to charge my phone if I want because it's got USB-A ports, which, again, fits into all those USB-A cables. It will do all of those things, and it's even got an SD reader in it because they don't have those. Sometimes you need those. So that's one of them, and it's only $39 on Amazon, right? So like relatively inexpensive in that sense.
Yeah.
My other favorite one is again back to Anker because I like Anker so much.
Oh yes.
They have a very portable USB-C thin little USB-C dock that I leave in my laptop case. It's got a built-in cable just like the OWC one does, which is great. Mm-hmm. It has three USB-A ports and an Ethernet port at the end, and that I just leave in my laptop bag. So I've always got USB-A ports with me. Those are the things, as I said, that you wind up needing to sync a phone and that sort of thing. So those two for sure. You will probably also want to add a USB-C to Lightning cable to your arsenal. And again, these are now available from other people other than Apple. You can get one from Apple and they're fine. You can get them from Anker. There's other companies. Just make sure you get one that's MFI certified so that it not only passes power, but also passes data.
Yeah,
that's
important.
It's handy to be able to plug your phone into your iPad directly into a USB-C port. For two reasons. Number one, that's what your laptop has, and it's nice if you know you have a dock, or if you don't have a dock with you, or your dock is having a problem, or whatever, it's nice to be able to have that flexibility. Mm-hmm. The other thing is USB-C will charge faster than USB-A, and that's true of not just your phone, but your iPad and things like that. So, you know, it's a handy thing. So throw one of those in your mix. It's, you know, it's going to cost you $15 and you're good to go.
Yeah.
I mentioned docks with USB-C, and these two docks that I mentioned are USB-C docks. Thunderbolt 3 will allow you to do more. It is going to be a rare scenario, in my opinion, that you're going to want to travel with a Thunderbolt 3 dock, but there are a few. And the reason really the reason that you would want to do it is if you need to connect two external video sources. So output devices. Chances are that's not going to be what happens. Most of the time, the only need for traveling, at least for me, is with external video is I want to play a movie on the TV in the hotel room, not the, you know, not just on my laptop screen.
Right.
That's only one. But if you're, you know, presenting at a, you know, at a conference or something, you might need to, and you can do that with Thunderbolt 3 in a way that you really can't with USB, with just a USB 3 interface. Mm-hmm. So CalDigit, many people make these docks. They are quite a bit more expensive, like $100 more expensive than their single video USB 3 counterparts. But they're there. CalDigit makes a good one, but there's others. IoGear makes one as well. And again, they mostly are with different types of video ports. So if you need two HDMI or need two DisplayPort or one of each, sort of decide what you need and then buy the dock that fits for you. So
yeah.
You're looking at like $120 for one of those. So, you know, don't buy it if you don't need it.
Absolutely. Now, the thing, honestly, it's not getting new cables or buying different flash drives or anything like that that gives me anxiety about getting a new laptop and trading in all the stuff I have now. It's MagSafe. Sure. It's literally MagSafe. The one thing that worries me is that the cable doesn't just pop off the side and harmlessly, you know, keep my computer from falling on the floor if I trip over the cable, which inevitably happens, especially when I'm traveling, because it's plugged in someplace weird or there's not a reasonable place for me to sit with my laptop. So, you know, like, especially since we're talking about traveling, that's the one that gets me most of the time. So that's the thing I'm worried about. And before we started the show, you said that you are not worried about that anymore.
I've never had an issue with that, and before or since the addition of USB-C to my world. There are so many. Here's the thing: your laptop with MagSafe. If you have a MagSafe laptop, that is the only device you have that would potentially be not susceptible to someone yanking a power cable. But every other device you have, when you're charging your phone, assuming that when you travel you're not bringing all sorts of cheap pads with you to charge wirelessly, but your phone is plugged in, your iPad's plugged in, even your AirPods are going to be plugged in, like all your things are going to be plugged in, you are already used to mitigating against leaving a cable in a precarious position. and so I think we have learned to overstate the importance of having a cable that can just be yanked out of the side of our devices. And to be fair, it's really not that good for the cable. When you yank a cable, you're pulling on it from both ends and the weaker end gives, but it doesn't mean that the stronger end, AKA the one that's plugged into the wall, isn't also suffering some sort of thing. And you're going to protect that anyway. So there's so few scenarios that I have where MagSafe would save me if it needed to, that it just, for me, it just really wasn't an issue. Honestly, the place where I worry and am conscious about it the most is not when traveling. It's at home. I keep a little, it's an old backpack or whatever, but I just keep it sort of in between the couch and the end table. And that's where I slip my laptop at night and I plug it into charge there. And I'm always now very cautious about, okay, I need to plug in the cable, but my laptop's standing up on end in a bag that's not closed, but with, a cable going into it. If it falls the wrong way, that could cause the cable to break off and the thing. And so I'm cautious about it. When I plug it in, I tuck it in and I make sure it's not going to fall. Whereas with MagSafe, I never thought about that because we had MagSafe. But other than that, it's just not. All the benefits that we just talked about, none of these are possible with MagSafe. So
that's true.
I think the benefits far outweigh the potential risk that I'm not sure I ever experienced prior to MagSafe, during MagSafe, or since MagSafe.
Okay.
I should knock on some wood or something. There you go.
Yeah. Andrew, are you living a USB-C lifestyle yet? I am not. We've made that abundantly clear. I am not. But are you?
The only USB-C device I have is my iPad, okay. But I do have a really nice dock for it, which gives me some extra ports. I think it has SD card, micro SD, USB-A, and I think a headphone jack. So it's pretty nice.
Yeah, that's it. Especially having a headphone jack is probably pretty nice. All right. So if you are also a person who is living USB-C and has freely given up MagSafe and you think it's fair trade, I definitely want to hear from you. You can email us at observations@magobserver.com. You can get us at TMO Daily on Twitter. And you can also leave comments in the show notes. At some point, I am going to end up having to upgrade my computer. I don't know when. But when I do get a new machine, I do want to, it's not so much giving up the ports because there's only a couple that are not USB that I actually ever need to use. So I'm not too worried about that part. It really is just when I use my computer plugged into something. So honestly, I figured the argument against it would be the battery life is so much better. You don't have to worry about having it plugged in. So there's no cable to worry about. So,
well, there's that too, right? Yeah. I mean, newer laptops just naturally have far better battery life. But there were a few like in the just pre-USB transition that had decent battery life, so that wasn't only a thing with USB-C, but it certainly is. Yeah. I mean, to be able to get realistically, that 8 to 10 hours actually, is what works out. So
yeah,
there were many days at CES last week where I happily brought my laptop with me, but left the battery behind because the battery's not light. To have whatever 27,000 milliamp hours of juice, you're paying for that in weight. I left it behind and never thought about it being a problem, and certainly never had it be a problem. So yeah,
all right. I want to thank both of you for being here today. Andrew, thank you for coming by to talk to us about tips with long press. That's always useful.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Dave, thanks for being here to talk to me about USB-C. I might be okay getting a new computer when it's time.
I think you're going
to
be all right.
This might be helping.
It's all going to work out. Thanks for having me.
All right. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.